You'll know as well as I do that business owners, who are typically going to be your customers, are a particular breed. They know their mind, and they don't mind taking advantage when they see weakness. So you need to be prepared for that.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today we are talking to Bob Gentle. Bob looks at lots of things to do with how he's restructured his agency, but also how to find your own success. It's a really great episode, so let's crack on with it. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, and you are joining a conversation between me, Pete Everett, and the wonderful Bob Gentle. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi, Pete. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem at all. It's great to have you on, and great that we could finally get this in the diary. We arranged this a few months ago, but good old Christmas and New Year and those kind of things got in the way. So we've been waiting for this one.
Yeah, I've been really excited about it because you're my first podcast interview.
There you go. Well, as a guest, you mean?
As a guest, yeah.
As a guest, fantastic. Because Bob does run a podcast, the Gravity Digital podcast, but you're the host, so you're seeing it for the first time from the other side. So hopefully you're not sitting there with sweaty palms and all of that kind of stuff.
I am a little bit. I had no idea how to prepare for this.
Well, look, we're all friends, so just be yourself. And you know, we just want to share a bit of advice and whatever with each other. So you're more than welcome to be here, and I'm very pleased to be your first. Hopefully, you won't listen back to this in like 6 months and cringe and think, "Oh God, are you? What was it like on Pete's podcast?" No, I'm kidding.
I'm sure you'll be amazing.
Thank you. So Bob runs NEC, which is an agency in Scotland, and Bob and I met at the Upreneur Summit in November. Now, it was both of our first time at Upreneur. So maybe actually before we get into that, Bob, do you want to give sort of an intro to yourself and who you are and what you do?
Yeah, Pete, thanks. As you said, my name's Bob Gentle, and I run an agency in the north of Scotland up in Aberdeen called NEC. And broadly speaking, we're a digital marketing agency. We cover the broad cross-section of businesses that there are. We don't really focus on one thing or another to any particular degree. Historically, we were mainly a web design company, but gradually over the last probably 3 years, we've sort of grown to focus exclusively on digital marketing now.
Okay, so you've actually, does that mean you've actually cut out the web sort of design and development side of the business altogether, or does one now feed the other in terms of your sort of your sales pipeline?
It did feed for a little while, but now I think the difficulty with websites is they've become highly commoditized. They're really difficult to distinguish yourself with. I think if you are going to be a web designer and you want to become known as a web designer or a web design agency these days, you have to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll be mediocre. And for the first probably 10 years we were doing that, we really did stand out. But these days, it's become much harder to really stand out in a very saturated and global market. Whereas, so yeah, we've really decided, okay, park that. We'll just move away from it and focus on the areas where we really do want to stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I get that. When Bob and I met, there was an obvious kind of similarity between the journey that you've been on up in the far north of Scotland and the journey we've been on a bit further south in mid England. And our agency model, we do still build a number of websites, but we are a bit more selective about the clients that we choose to build them for. And we've also become far more proactive, I suppose is the word, in selecting, in sort of qualifying the clients before we even go down that path. Because, you know, the number of conversations I've had where somebody's asked, how much does a website cost? And then you sort of have this whole conversation about, well, you know, what do you want it to achieve? What's the functionality? Who's your audience, et cetera, et cetera. And then you come to some form of a quote or a figure and they say, yeah, but, you know, my friend's cousin is 19 and he'll do it in his bedroom for 1500 quid or whatever it might be, 500 quid. And it's like, yeah, that's not something we can compete with. That's not something we want to compete with. So we've repositioned the way we sell websites, although they still are part of our workflow at the moment. I'm sure that's something you can probably relate to.
It absolutely is. I think you have to know who you want to work for, and the rules of engagement have to be set well in advance. you'll know as well as I do that business owners who are typically going to be your customers are a particular breed. Mm. They know their mind and they don't mind taking advantage when they see weakness. So you need to be prepared for that.
You do indeed. And the other thing I've found is that where you do get into the discussions about the cheaper end of websites, let's say, those customers can be just as hard, if not harder, to service than those that are paying. I'm not talking like, you know, 15, 20, 30,000 pounds, but I'm talking, you know, if you're looking at a £2,000 website versus a £7,000 website, actually the £2,000 website can be far harder to complete than the £7,000 website, for example.
Yeah, and I think often the person that's spending the £2,000, very likely it's coming out of their pocket, and you'll find there's an awful lot more emotion attached to that £2,000 than there is the £30,000 that's coming out of a corporate budget.
Yeah.
And that all plays into the experience between the developer, designer, and the customer.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you run NEC. There's also a bit of a but there as well, isn't there? Because I know that there's multiple strands to what you do. So we've already mentioned your podcast. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But do you want to sort of explain some of the other things that you're looking at? I know you're sort of, since Upreneur, you've sort of had a focal moment, haven't you, about who it is that you want to work with and your kind of mission, if you like, your sort of purpose to what you do, and that you're excited about getting that going in 2019.
Yeah, I think I mentioned, I'll maybe tell the backstory a little bit with NEC. As I mentioned before, we were a web design company for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it simply wasn't fulfilling anymore. That would be the best way to describe it. When I really reflected on a lot of this at Upreneur Summit, a lot of the conversations I had there really unlocked things that I hadn't been fully aware of, which sounds a bit weird for a marketing conference, but if you've been there, you'll understand. I'll go back to the fulfillment side of things. When I got into web design, this is going back to something around the year 2000, probably slightly before that, I realized I can make an impact on people's lives with this. And if you were involved in it back then, you'll realize this was a marginal niche space. Mm. But I suddenly realized, from being actually probably quite lost in life, but not really having much direction, suddenly found this is where I want to spend my time. So I very quickly became a contractor, freelancer, gradually built a business. But the internet changed, and the internet became much broader than simply websites. But I was the web guy, the web design guy. And really, probably the last 5 years, I have not been happy with what I was doing and what we were doing as a business, and decided, okay, we're going to focus on the digital marketing side of things. But that in itself still didn't bring me the level of fulfillment that I wanted. And at Upreneur Summit, I realized that the people that I want to serve, and maybe I'll flip over to the podcast. This is a bit of jumping around, but bear with me. One unexpected byproduct of doing the podcast, where I speak to digital marketing business owners and people who are peripheral to that on a regular basis, was I started to really understand what makes success in our space, and really boils down to a few simple things. And one of those is specialization. Mm-hmm. The sort of web design is very, very general, but then you move into an even more broadly general space, which is digital marketing, and that's everything from search to content to video marketing. It's a ridiculously broad category.
Yep.
And yet people go to a digital marketing agency, and that doesn't really make any sense, because you're not going to get any depth. So specialization for me is one thing that I see is really important in the future. But then also specializing in a vertical market. Some of the most successful people I know in digital marketing, they might be focusing on a technical specialism, but they might also be focusing on a vertical market. And I thought, I need to look at a vertical market that's going to work for me. Mm-hmm. And this is brand new. This is really where I am right now, because at the moment I am general. So I realized I want to specialize in business owners who really want to put themselves into their business. They want to be courageous. They want to really become the visible front end for their business. Mm-hmm. And I want to help them not only with the digital marketing, but I want to help them with the mindset and the productization, the product ladder, the customer experience, mm-hmm. and deliver that whole mix to that market. So that's where I am right now. So you mentioned NEC. NEC is going to rebrand into a new brand called Amplify Me. I'm not there yet, but that's kind of where I am at the moment. So sorry, that's okay. That's my ramble.
We've got a scoop. That's brilliant. No, that's all really exciting, really encouraging. And I think actually, I know you mentioned that you're jumping around a bit there, but I think it's a really good thing to where I've come from with the podcast and with some of the stuff that I'm planning to do with the community in the next year is to demonstrate a journey. So there's a whole group of people that listen to this podcast that are currently in paid employment in some kind of marketing capacity, but they have an employer, and I know from the groups and from the conversations that I have that they are wanting to start making the first steps into self-employment. And a lot of people just look at me and say, look, where do I start? And almost the problem is that when you look online and you see a lot of the entrepreneurs online that are in the space, people, they position themselves in a way that they kind of have all of their ducks already lined up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's very easy to look at people and say, yes, but that's easy for you to say because you've already got your book out and you've got a podcast that's got 200 episodes and you've got a list of 10,000 people and you've got this and you've got that and you've got the other and you've got the budget to do it. I'm sitting here, wanting to leave my, 18, 20, 25,000 pound job, whatever it might be, and I've got me and a laptop. Where do I begin? So actually, the fact that you've sort of mentioned that you're jumping around, I think it's just healthy to show that, you know what, the thing about being an entrepreneur is you can try something, and it's better to try and, I don't want to use the word fail, but maybe not succeed as you expect, because you can then always pivot into something else or back up that avenue a little bit and try something else that's a little bit different. But if it's better to try and not succeed and pivot than it is to not try at all, and then another year goes by and you're still in the same place, and then before you know it, 5 years goes by, and then all of a sudden you want to buy a house, so you need a mortgage, so actually becoming self-employed isn't a great time now, so I'm going to hang around for another 2 years, and all of a sudden life just disappears under you.
I think that's absolutely right, and I think what's important to remember as well is success is a moving target. If I look back at where I wanted to be in the year 2000 or 2005, where I was 5 years ago was exactly there. I had achieved what I wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
But it didn't bring me what I thought it was going to bring me. Yeah, the money was great. I was making a very good living, but once you get to that point, you think, well, is this what I want to do for the next 10 years? Because the answer is definitely no.
I'm not one of those people that massively sort of suffers with imposter syndrome, rightly or wrongly. It doesn't affect me that my head just doesn't work that way, which is
lucky.
Whether people want to hear it or not, that's a different matter, and that's kind of up to them. But I'm not one of those people that's sort of it just doesn't affect me. My head isn't wired that way, and that's fine. The thing that does get me, however, is I hate the feeling of being on a hamster wheel.
Oh God, yes.
And I will put 1,010% effort into not getting off the hamster wheel. If people are relying on me and jobs need doing, that's fine. But in structuring my business and my life in such a way that it doesn't feel like a hamster wheel, that is sort of my driving focus. It would be, have you experienced, it sounds like you've experienced a bit like that. Was that kind of relevant to where you were?
The hamster wheel was my world for 10 years.
Right. Yeah.
I think the web design industry, and this for me was an important moment. The web design industry is very, very competitive. And the big difference between where I am now and where I was then I could best sum it up without summing it up, probably, is when you're in the web design space, you have to replace your entire client base every 3 months. Mm. And that means you're constantly outselling, or you're constantly quoting, you're constantly doing the work. And it's really, really difficult to take your to look up from time to time. And where I am locally, there's one company who, for the entire time I've been in business, he's been my main competitor. This one individual was my nemesis. And I was forced to sit down with him probably about a year ago. And we'd never spoken with any sort of length. But I was forced to sit down and speak to him one day. And honestly, if you put two of us in a room together and turn the lights out, only one guy was coming out alive. And we got talking. And I realized I got this all wrong. We had so much in common. It was frightening. Professionally, yes, but on a personal level as well. I do search and rescue for the Coast Guard. He's a retained firefighter.
Wow.
He surfs. I surf badly. He's better than me. Just so much in common beyond agency owner. Proper best friend material. Mm. And I realized the people that I want to spend time with most are actually the people who I have most in common with. It is these business owners. And it was that hamster wheel that had prevented me from actually engaging with the people that I enjoy spending time with the most. Mm. That hamster wheel is a killer. And I think that's why it's so important to really not focus too much on the commodity side of the market. Because if you're not building value in lots of different ways for lots of different groups, it's so easy to fall into that trap of constantly doing the same thing day in, day out. And it's unsustainable.
It is. It is. And there's a massive mental shift there, which is to do with your own value and your own self-worth, and actually understanding that you do a good job, and that what you've got to offer, I don't know, maybe you've been working in marketing for 10 years. So you've got 10 years worth of experience. You're going to do a far better job now than you would have done 9.5 years ago. And in all of that experience builds up into additional value that you can then give to the clients that you're working for. That Lee Jackson has a very good, makes a very good point where he says you owe it to your clients to actually charge a fair price. Because if you're struggling financially, then actually that means you're scratching around, you're having to get work out quickly, you can't spend the time on it that it needs, your quality control goes out the window, and actually what you then end up with is a lower quality of work for a cheaper price, and you're back on the and as soon as that one's out the door, then you're onto the next one, and you're back onto the hamster wheel again, but just with low value work. Now that isn't to say that you can just go and, I don't know, add 500% to your prices. I'm not sort of saying, right, everybody, whatever you're charging now, go and up it. But actually, what I am saying is that you need to consider what you are worth. You need to understand firstly, what your living expenses are, that the amount of money that you need to make just to survive, that you can be comfortable on. Maybe add a bit on top of that so that, you know, you do need rest and recuperation. You do need to take some time off from time to time. So, there needs to be a bit of cover for that. And that's kind of your minimum. But then when you then start looking at putting a business plan together for your new marketing consultancy business, for example, you then need to look at it in the sense of, right, so I've had 10 years experience, I've had 15 years experience, 20 years experience, whatever it is, that's brought me to this point. That also has a value because I can come into your situation as my client and understand the factors surrounding whatever it is we're trying to achieve and put in a solution for you that is then going to make you X many thousand pounds. I'm rambling a bit now, but do you sort of see the point I'm trying to make in the sense of valuing your own worth?
I do, absolutely. I think a lot of people, they probably know the worth of what they're doing. I think the biggest insecurity most people have when they are in an internal role is the perceived danger of it not working. Mm. That they may not get the customers, or the customers may not like what they do and they might fire them. And I always come back to, as an employer or as a business owner, you know how many people have to get annoyed before I'm going to get fired? It's a lot. Whereas if I'm an employee, how many people do I have to annoy before I get fired? One.
Yep.
And not even necessarily annoy. It might just be a line on a spreadsheet tips that balance one day and you find yourself redundant. Mm-hmm. So I would say the safest thing anybody could ever do is set up their own business. And it is ridiculously easy. A lot of people overthink it.
Yep.
What does success look like for you in order to be able to make a living? And it's actually surprisingly little a lot of the time. If you are in an internal marketing role, you might be on between sort of 25 at the junior end through to 60 at the higher end. And how many clients do you need in order to deliver that income? And if you price things correctly, it's surprisingly few. And if you start that business while you're still employed, which in most people's situations, unless you're working for an agency, is perfectly reasonable, your employer won't have an issue with it. Mm. You can quite quickly develop that path towards independence and running your own agency. It's really not that difficult. The things I would avoid are getting involved with local enterprise agencies. The thing I would recommend straight away is get an accountant on day one.
Yep.
I think it was one of my sort of colleagues or partners or sort of co-conspirators back when I was started all of this. She was a freelance copywriter in London, and she said, get an accountant on the very first day. They will be worth way more than they cost you in the short term, never mind the long term. And she was absolutely right. I think anybody at any level can run their own business. There's a guy called Russell Brunson.
Yep.
Whose products I'm not the biggest fan of, but he's written a couple of really good books. And one of the things he's said a few times, and I think he's probably right, is that demand for digital marketing services is growing 60% faster than supply is coming on stream. And the beauty of digital marketing in any specialism is that whereas websites, once you've bought it, you've bought it. You're not going to buy it again for another 5 to 10 years. With digital marketing, myself and my agency, I have 15 clients. That's enough. I don't need any more. Mm. There are, in my local area, 150,000 businesses. So there's plenty for everyone. You'd be surprised the demand there is for digital marketing services. You just need to let people know you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a fallacy almost that you, and you touched on this earlier about when we were talking about specialization and people going to a digital marketing agency. There's a fallacy about thinking that you need to be able to do all digital marketing before you can start attracting digital marketing clients. It's not about that. It's, you know, you have the thing or the things that you can do really well. I'm an SEO guy. And because of the SEO side of things, I've also got skills in AdWords. And that's the only pay-per-click side of things that I personally have skills in. But as part of our agency, we have people that are certified from Facebook, for Facebook PPC, for example. We also have copywriters. We have, you know, they're not things that I can do. To be honest, that one of the reasons I started a podcast is because my writing, if I was to write a blog, factually they're fine, but they're as dry as can be. Nobody would want to read it. So you then need to start looking at the contacts you have around you to see if you can then start to build connections with, I suppose the proper business term for them is strategic partnerships, isn't it?
Yeah.
With other people that are in the marketing space, but you know, you're a great copywriter. That person over there is a great SEO person or a video, you know, they do video production or whatever it might be. And you start to make connections there and, you know, referring work backwards and forwards.
I think one of the best things I've done recently, and it kind of builds on what you were saying there, was one of the outcomes of sort of sitting down to chat to this guy I mentioned was I started running some events. So every second month I run a digital marketing themed meetup mm-hmm. in my local area. And it's been really entertaining because people don't understand what my game is. What's my angle? What's my pitch? Because I don't try and sell anything there. I'm quite low-key when I'm there. And you just see these people coming, sort of blinking into the light, really enjoying meeting each other. They've never done it before. And for me, it's all about that. It's really about developing this awareness of who's there, who's good, who does what, so that when, as I go forward, I can start to integrate people in my business. The approach that I take with digital marketing from my clients at the moment is I have a framework approach that I use, and it really starts with, what are your goals? What do you want to achieve? Because it's different for every client. And then I start to look at their platform. So what are they using in terms of social media? What's their search profile? What kind of advertising are they doing? And that platform then needs to be fueled by content and a content strategy, content production, and all that stuff, automation. There's lots of stuff comes into the content layer. And then I'm looking at, okay, well, you've got all this visibility now you've achieved through the content and the platform stuff. But how are we going to turn that into an outcome for you? So we need to look at funnel strategies. And within funnel strategies, there's all kinds of things like sort of email automation and analytics and lead magnets and all that stuff.
Yep.
And then the final part of the piece is what I call power base. And that's all the people that have done business with you before. So often it's looking at things like CRM. It's traditional linear email marketing, that kind of thing. And every time I go through that with a client, I explain to them, my job is to deliver this structure for you, but I'm not the specialist SEO guy. SEO is important. You need to understand how it fits in. Mm. I'm not a copywriter. I'm not a content person. I'm not great at funnel automation, but I will make sure that when an SEO guy knocks on the door and tells you the biggest thing for you is SEO, that you don't have the sort of rose-tinted glasses thinking SEO is going to fix everything and forget about conversion and forget about your email marketing. You need to pull all the right levers in the right order. And I'm the levers guy. But that's it. I'm not the levers.
No, I've got a vision of you. Can you remember those sort of like 1950s, 1960s films where they had like steam railways and you'd see the bloke in the signal box with like 57 levers in front of him to make the trains move around the shunting yard? I've got that vision of you.
Yeah, and that's really where I probably specialize in the digital marketing mix at the moment, and it's great, but I come back to the fulfillment element. Who do I want to impact? What do I want my legacy to be? Mm. And I have to be kind of careful here because I want to help people that want to be courageous in their marketing. That's probably where I'll come down to. One person asked me, what's the future of digital marketing? And my answer was courage. It's not technology. It's not tactics. It really comes down to people who, you've got things like chatbots. You've got email automation, all kinds of stuff that's really great technology. But people buy from people. And if you're not willing to insert yourself into that conversation, you're very quickly going to fall behind. And the guys who are going to step up are the ones that automate really well. The future belongs to the brave in terms of digital marketing and for business owners, and those are the people that I really want to empower.
That makes perfect sense. And you know what? There's also a truth in there for people that are wanting to take that. They're teetering on the edge. They're playing with the idea of setting up their own business and trying to do this alone. You know what? It's putting yourself out there, becoming the face of your business. People, you're dead right. People do business with people who they know, like, and trust. And if you're not prepared to put your face out there, or if that's the first step, that's the first challenge for you, that's where you need to find your courage.
My dad told me an interesting story back when I was starting my business, because he runs a software business. Mm-hmm. But before that, he was the chief engineer for a big oil company. He looked after lots of oil rigs. And he said they had a big yard and a warehouse where they stored everything, and they bought rubber gaskets from a rubber gasket company. And they've been using the same rubber gasket company for years. And then there was another rubber gasket company. And the salesman from that other rubber gasket company came to visit every week. And he always brought a box of biscuits with him. And they said, no, sorry, we can't buy your rubber gaskets. We buy them from that guy. And this happened for months and months and months. And then one day the delivery didn't arrive from the other company. So who got the work?
Yep.
The biscuit guy.
Yep.
And that's always stuck in my mind. You need to be the guy people know. And in your local area, that's, I'm not going to say it's easy to do, but if you spend all your time networking, which is what I did probably for the first 8 years of my business, you can achieve that in 8 years. You can become the guy people know. But it's a huge investment.
Yeah.
You spend 1 hour a week building up a YouTube channel, doing a podcast, doing your social media right. You can achieve that much, much, much more quickly. And people always use the guy they know. So your job is to be the guy they know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris Ducker, who, so we're starting to come a bit full circle now to back to Youpreneur. Chris Ducker uses the expression "become their favorite," doesn't he?
Yeah.
And that's that sort of stuck with me the first time I heard him say it. Is yeah, you know, we're here to serve, but we're here to do it in a way that doesn't seem like hard work. We want to connect with people because they want to connect with us, and they're either wanting to find more information, or they're ready to take the next step, or they're just, I don't know, just doing a bit of research. But you're there to, if you look at all of the content that you generate, all of the marketing that you do, whether that's, as you just said, you know, video, YouTube, social media, whatever, if before you hit that publish button, if you can just take a step back and say, right, is that as good as I can make it for my audience, because they're the people I want to connect with, that's really who this piece of content is for, then all of a sudden it's asking yourself one question before you hit publish. Maybe a few tweaks, but it just lifts the level of, I guess what I'm saying is, people can see that quality because you've considered them before you've hit publish.
Yes, and I think into that, I would also maybe offer a slightly alternative perspective on it, that a lot of people get really, really hung up on, do I look right? Is everything on brand? I'm somebody that really suffers from perfectionism. Some people may argue that. But and it's taken me a long time to get to this point. Again, coming back to Russell Brunson, he sums it up as, we all worry about how we're going to be received. And that's the same anxiety. You said you don't really suffer from imposter syndrome, so this may not apply to you. You may not feel it as acutely. But most people do feel really, really anxious about putting themselves out there. Mm. And Russell Brunson said, there is a third of people who, doesn't matter who you are, they will not like you. That's going to be true of me. It's true of Johnny Depp. It's true of anybody. He will have people that just instinctively reject him. They just mm-hmm. don't like him. And it's completely unconscious. There is a third of people that will just be ambivalent. They won't even notice you. But there will be a third of people who will really get you. They'll connect with you. That's your audience. Those are the people you need to think about. And I do think in terms of audience and not market. And in this sense, that if you can reach that third, that those will be your customers, those will be your fans, they'll be your what's the word?
Your tribe.
Yes, and out of that you build your business. I know that there's times I've gone into meetings, and I've just known, this guy just doesn't like me, and I haven't understood it. It's just been instinctive, and you'll find the same thing online. But I would always encourage people, if you don't make the effort to insert yourself into your marketing, become visible, you'll never address that third that want you.
Yeah.
Flaws and all.
You see, that's the thing that mentality you've just been through. I think that's why. And when I say I don't really get imposter syndrome, I think it's because my take on it is, you know what, when I'm talking to people, I'm not pushing stuff in front of anybody. I'm not making anybody listen to me or read my stuff, or, you know, it's entirely their choice. If they don't like what they see, then that's fine. That's up to them. There's, you know, I wish them well. I, you know, go the world's your oyster. That's absolutely fine. But if I don't put out some form of content, if I don't try and develop myself, and if I don't try and offer that value down to an audience, then I'll never find that third that are going to resonate with me.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy to put stuff out there fully under the knowledge that somewhere between a half and two thirds of people will just pass me by. And it doesn't, I don't take that as a personal reflection on me, because I know that two thirds of the people that I see, I pass by as well, if you see what I mean. It sort of passes on.
Yeah. And I think particularly in digital marketing, if Instagram does my head in. That if your profile is just full of motivational quotes and marketing information, nobody's met you.
Yep.
Don't fall into that trap of doing what you see everybody else doing, because it doesn't work. It's not working for them. It's not going to work for you. It certainly wouldn't work for me. The thing that works for me online is every time I give people an opportunity to meet me, it works for me. And it never ceases to surprise me.
You know, the interesting thing with that is that one of the things we do with clients when we're starting to work with a client on a digital marketing contract, for want of a better word, we do exactly the same as you do. We look at their goals. We look at their forecasts for the next, up to the next 3 years, if they can give us that amount of detail and all that kind of stuff. And then we also then validate their business against what they are telling us their goals are. So we worked with a company that made, they'd custom designed this play equipment. And the idea was, it was really for like nurseries and parks. They were trying to sell it to, county councils and that kind of thing. And it was this modular system. So it was all based around a honeycomb. So it's six-sided. And, you know, you could buy the whole set, which there was, I think they'd made six versions of it. They'd gone quite a long way with the whole honeycomb six-sided idea. So there were six different sets which you could sort of fit together. And you could, of course, you could come and buy all six in one pack, or you could buy one and then a second and it would bolt on, et cetera, et cetera. And you could rearrange it in different ways. And they'd spent something like, off the top of my head, I think it was about £250,000 on getting these molds made in the Far East somewhere, Taiwan or somewhere, and had them shipped to a place in the UK where they could then use these molds to make the equipment. And they, because they were a relatively new company, they didn't have space to store this stuff, so they were making it to order. And when they got an order in, it would then take them, they needed a minimum of 2 weeks in order to manufacture the stuff before they could ship it. So we sat down to have this discovery session, and the guy that owns it, he's put all this money in, he's sitting at the end of the table, says, I want you to sell me 10 every month. That's the goal. Yeah. Within 6 months, I want to be selling 10 a month. And we're looking at him and saying, but you can't. We can sell you 10 a month, but you can't deliver 10 a month. Oh, yes, I can. We've got these molds. No, you can't, because it takes you 14 days to manufacture it, and you've only got one set of molds. So the most you can make is two sets a month. And we had to, the client had this great idea of where they wanted their business to be, but their production line simply couldn't meet the expectation of what they wanted to achieve. So we needed to put a bit of a reality check in there for them as well.
Yeah. I think alongside that, I mean, I've had some real errors of judgment. There have been people who have come in and I've thought, your business is never going to work, because I would see an awful lot of early stage startups. And I've just been blown away sometimes by how badly I can get that wrong. it's so easy to take people for granted or misjudge things. You can never really predict what's going to be successful.
No, absolutely. And, you know, that there's so many different markets. We really are coming full circle now, because you did talk about specializing in a vertical. And, you know, so you have your own specialization. You've tailored that to work in one vertical market. Somebody with, exactly the same specialization, somebody specializing in the same thing can work in a different vertical and have a completely different model to you, yet they're still just as successful for their own clients.
Yeah. I think for me, that specializing in a vertical market, if I were looking at starting an agency now, that would be the place that I look first. One of my favorite podcast episodes that I did was with a guy called Joe Burnish, mm-hmm. who lives in Montana, and he runs... he does websites and digital marketing, but just for floor cleaning companies. And he employs 4 people and turns over $500,000 a year. And he just has an incredible business. And it would be so easy to dismiss that as a vertical market, thinking they don't spend a lot of money. But he has systematization. He has everything repeatable and templated. He knows how to deliver for these customers. And these customers love him. If you were a general agency trying to compete with the results he gets, you just couldn't.
No.
And you could do the same thing. The easy trap is to fall into accountants and people who have lots of money, but there's just as much money in waste disposal as there is in accountants.
Yeah.
Ice cream parlors. How many ice cream parlors are in the world? If you're the ice cream parlor guy, you'll get all that work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as it happens... just before we started recording this, we were having a bit of a chat, and it turns out that this week we've both released episodes interviewing a guy called Alex Curtis. So Alex, another shout out to you. Now Alex, he runs a company called The Lead Engine, but they have specialized into financial services. So it's just another example. So if I'll put a link to his episode, the episode that I've done with him, but also the episode that you've released with him, in the show notes, so people can go and check out Alex as well. I must admit, I've not listened to yours yet, because it literally only went live this morning, the morning we're recording. But I know what he said to me. So I know on mine, we did talk quite a bit about why he chose financial services, et cetera, et cetera. So listen to those two episodes, and you'll get another exposure to niching down into a vertical rather than into a skill.
Yeah.
So. Well, Bob, look, thank you so much for your time. We've kind of gone around the houses, but I feel like we've sort of come back full circle to, you know, we've come to a sort of natural good conclusion point. If people wanted to reach out to you, how can they get in touch?
You can find me on pretty much every social channel, just at Bob Gentle. That'd be Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. On LinkedIn, connect with me. I'm happy to receive connection requests from anybody. Visit my website, bobgentle.com, or my agency site, which is studionec.com. If anybody is thinking about growing an agency, there's a really good download on my website called The 6 Keys, soon to be 7, for building success in your digital marketing agency. The reason there's a 7th is I had a revelation one morning working out that the 7th key is people, and I always wanted a 7th key. So that's it. I have some ideas around people that I want to add in, but
they do say that when you're creating content and you're wanting snappy titles, odd numbers work better than even.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they.
Well, also lucky 7. Seven is just a good number, and I knew there had to be 7. The other 6 are great. They're probably really important, but if you want to grow a business, you're going to need people, and really understanding the right people will help a lot. I've made a lot of mistakes. And to anybody that's ever worked for me, I've got some right as well.
Well, look, I'll put a link to your website in the show notes, definitely. I can see on your website that you've got links to all your social profiles on there as well.
So
people can find you that way. Just looping back to something you mentioned. You mentioned how Instagram hacks you off a bit, because it, you know, for accounts that are full of motivational quotes and that kind of thing. Where do you stand on sort of showing people the background, sort of some background information, sort of, you know, behind the scenes, that's the words I'm looking for, behind the scenes footage, because Instagram seems to be a good place to share that.
It absolutely is. I think it's the phrase I would use with customers is let people peek behind the curtain. I think mm-hmm. we're all, as business owners, agencies, we really focus on the polished veneer. And that's really difficult to build any intimacy with. And Instagram is a great place to let people see what's behind that polished veneer and let them connect with the people in the business. Mm. Be that a giant agency or you on your own. I think a lot of people, this for me is a big mindset thing. And I'm sorry to ramble on with time, but
it's all right, don't
we? When you're starting an agency, when you're starting a business, we all fall into the trap of the we. We'll do this, we'll do that. We're a company, we must always present ourselves as bigger than we actually are. If you don't fall into that trap and really focus on building that intimate connection with a customer or a prospect or an audience by really letting them meet you, you'll do much, much better, much, much more quickly. So I'm very much a peek behind the curtain guy. Let people see who you are, what you're into, because people may be into the same thing and they want to get to know you. Let people choose you.
Thank you again for your time, Bob. And links will be in the show notes. I'm not 100% sure which episode it will be, so the link will be in the intro and the outro. And thank you again for your time.
No, thanks so much, Pete. I really enjoyed it, way more than I expected.
No worries. Thanks, Bob. Speak to you soon. Bob, thanks so much for your time. That was a really great episode, and you shared lots of insight into how you have found success in your business. I'm sure our listeners got plenty out of it. Show notes for this episode can be found at peteeverett.com/041. And there's links on the show notes over to Bob's podcast that I'd really recommend you go and check out as well. Next week is our 1 year show. It's our first birthday, and I'm going to be doing a special solo show looking at the last 12 months of podcasting and the community that's grown through the podcast itself. Come and join us in the Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group. Or just search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast, and I'll see you next week when I will bring cake.